Well, hello, everyone. Welcome. Jesse here. Welcome to another episode of The Song of the Mountain, a podcast where we talk about the deep and profound ways that stories impact us and the kind of lives that those stories might be calling us to live. Today, we are going to deep dive into the first thing that you need to do for your life to become a story, which is how do you get out of Act One? Stay tuned. All right. Welcome back. If you didn't hear the last episode, Four Things You Need for Your Life to Become a Story, this episode deep dives into the first part of that episode. So to recap, the episode talks about four things you need for your life to become a story, which is getting out of Act One, discovering your genius, creative abilities, your magic abilities, however you want to put it, finding a quest, and listening for the voice of the narrator. And what I want to do is deep dive into each one of those episodes or each one of those topics, because they all, I think, deserve some real thought to be really useful for you. Before we dive in, the whole point of all of this is to help you sort of grab hold of whatever meaning, purpose, adventure, wonder you experience in the world of imagination and bring it into this life, or rather to see what magic is actually around you that you only experience in stories. See, I spent so many years diving into video games and books and all these wonderful things, and I still do, but I am unwilling to leave the magic of stories in my TV, to leave the wonder in the book, in my video game console, so to speak. I firmly believe that if we long for it, if there's some part of us that deeply desires a thing in those stories, that we can find it here in this world somehow, that there is somewhere that we can find it. And it's because I'm unwilling to do that, that I started this podcast. And I want to help you and help myself find that wonder and magic in our lives. Because it's just, to me, it's just deeply unsatisfying to experience this amazing world in the story and then go back to a cyclical, meaningless life. That doesn't feel good. That doesn't feel right. That doesn't feel in alignment with what I know to be true. Okay, so the way we're going to do that today is to talk about how to get out of Act One. Now, to recap this specific point, there is a moment in a story, in the archetypal story, called the inciting event. The inciting event is when the protagonist gets kicked out of their life of normalcy, the normal way of things, and starts the story. It's when Luke Skywalker gets the message from Princess Leia and he leaves his little farm to go become a Jedi Knight. It's when Harry Potter gets the invitation to Hogwarts. It's when Bilbo gets the knock on the door from Gandalf. Okay, it's something that knocks the protagonist out of their normal life into the story. And so, as I pointed out last time, the story really doesn't start until after this point. The only reason we have the pre-inciting event is because we need context as the viewers of this story. We need context on, wait, who is this protagonist? What is their life like? And what's kind of the backdrop of the story? But the story doesn't start until the inciting event does that. Now, what's important to note here is that it's actually not just the inciting event happening that starts the story. It is the protagonist responding to the inciting event. Let me say that again. It is not the inciting event itself that starts the story. It is the protagonist responding to the inciting event. Here's why. Imagine this scenario. Harry Potter gets the invitation to go to Hogwarts, and he just says, huh, nice, sure, whatever. Magic's not real. I knew that. Like, I thought I believed in magic when I was 5, but like what life has told me and what the adult world has told me is all this stuff isn't real. Like, forget that. And he could have completely ignored it. And guess what? There would have been no story, or at least no story that involved Harry Potter. Okay? If Bilbo had just told Gandalf, hey, you know what? I don't want to invite you to tea. I'm not interested in you coming back. Please don't. Please just don't come back at all. And the story wouldn't have happened. Now, what's interesting as an additional kind of even more nuanced layer there is that both of these protagonists also did try to kind of ignore the inciting event. And so that's what's interesting, too, is yes, they did respond eventually, which is what started the story, but they needed some nudging, right? Like Harry Potter was like, he's a kid, right? His, you know, adopted parents, the Dursleys, were like, get these owls and shit out of my house. I don't want flying notes and owl poop all over my living room. And Harry kind of was just sort of sitting in the back doing his normal thing, like, okay, well, I guess I have to do what, you know, the Dursleys tell me to do. So it took some prodding, okay? So there's going to be some reluctance, but in the end, they respond to the inciting event, okay? So to recap, the story doesn't happen until the inciting event, but it's not the inciting event itself. It is the response to the inciting event, okay, that actually creates the story. So let's talk about how do you get out of Act One? Like how do you respond to these inciting events? How do you see those inciting events in your life and actually let them propel you into the story? Well, the first thing we got to ask before we even say, how do we get out of Act One is how do you even, two things, how do you know you're in Act One? How do you know you're stuck in the hamster wheel of pre-Act One? And also, are you committed to getting out of Act One? Okay, so let's start with the first one. How do you know you're in Act One? Okay, so Act One feels like Groundhog Day. Remember the movie Groundhog Day with Bill Murray? He replays the same day over and over and over and over again. And what he does is he just kind of changes things slightly to achieve different outcomes. It's very monotonous, but he has this immense power and control due to the monotony of his life. But do you feel like that? Right? When you wake up with your kids, take them to school, make meals, go to work, come back, do you feel like your life is Groundhog Day? That it just kind of goes on? Okay? If it feels like that, you might be stuck in Act One. I remember that is how my life felt for a while, eventually, working in tech. It didn't always. In the beginning, I think of my career in tech and at LinkedIn, it didn't feel like that. I actually felt energized and motivated by some of the things I wanted to do, but eventually it just sort of felt like Act One, right? Like I'm going to work, putting in hours. And one of the main reasons it feels like it's just going on is you're not doing anything that means anything to you. Okay. We're going to talk about that more in the Finding a Quest episode, but just as a sort of teaser to that, part of the reason you feel like you're just in Act One is that lack of a quest means you're just putting time towards things that mean pretty much nothing to you. That if you weren't getting paid to do them or you didn't, quote, have to do them, you wouldn't do them at all. And it's that feeling of stuckness of life is happening to me. Life is in charge of me instead of the other way around that keeps you stuck there. And that brings me to the second point is, are you committed to getting out of Act One? See, this is the real question. I firmly believe that the things we are genuinely, wholeheartedly committed to happen. Now, that's a big statement. Even as I said that, I'm like, ooh, do you really believe that? Have you thought of every circumstance? Here's been my experience so far, is the things I say that I want, but I'm not actually really committed to, if I'm really telling the truth, like the microscopic truth inside of me, that I don't actually want them to happen. Let me give you some examples. Relationship intimacy. Okay, most of us, you know, if you're in a committed, serious relationship, think that we want intimacy. But I would ask you, like, are you actually committed, like genuinely, to an open, vulnerable, intimate relationship with your partner. And we can't, I'm not going to go into all the ways that you know whether you're committed, but the thing you need to ask yourself is, are you sabotaging? Are you doing things to unconsciously sabotage those things that you think you want or you say that you want? Right? You say you want intimacy with your partner, but you start picking little fights right after you have a time of intimacy with them. Right? That's, again, we talked about this in the upper limit episode in the last season with Katie Hendricks, in that we have these upper limits. We have these limits to what we're open to receiving in our lives. And the important thing there is to go, what in this context is the normal hamster wheel of life can become an upper limit. We say, no, like life, this is what life is. Like life is me going, getting up, me going to work, me making a living, me coming home and then doing it all over again. And that's what I'm stuck with. And then any type of idea or desire to get out of that immediately hits that upper limit. So that's the next thing to ask yourself is, do you have an upper limit that is keeping you in act one? Do you have some kind of belief? Is it uncomfortable for you to even think about getting out of act one? Because fundamentally, act one is a commitment to playing it safe. It is a commitment to playing it safe. It is an aversion to risk. Okay. When you are in act one, when you look at all the protagonists, like take Bilbo, right? He doesn't want to get out of act one because it's dangerous to get out of act one. Like outside of Hobbiton, outside of his little hobbit hole, it's dangerous, or it feels dangerous. And it was, right? It went, his journey went up and down and all around and in all kinds of impossible situations. And so that's the thing that to realize is that if you have, this is something for maybe a different set of people here listening, is for all of you listening that have tried to get out of act one and it didn't go the way you expected. Friends, that's exactly what a story is. A story is, see, here's the problem. When you carry your pre-act one principles into the story, they don't work, people. Here's what I mean. The principles of pre-act one is things are going to be consistent. Things are going to turn out exactly the way I expect. And I'm not going to have any problems or friction. So you maybe buy this idea of taking a risk, getting out of act one, doing something, taking a risk on doing something you love, but it doesn't go the way you expect. And you're like, well, shit, I guess it didn't work. And I felt like that, right? Even in this podcast, I was like, man, I thought I'd have I don't think I thought I had a million subscribers. But like when I looked at like in the beginning, how much did it pick up? Or my workshops, how many people bought them? Like it didn't happen as fast as I wanted. And I went, oh, well, I guess it didn't work. Right? So what I was doing is I was carrying my pre-act one, that was a little horse whinny right there, a pre-act one principle into act one. And guess what? It didn't work. Because stories don't work that way. Stories are constantly throwing challenges at you, and they are here to train you. This is the whole point of a story, right? It's to train you to recognize the real story of your life. See, when you get into the real story and you get out of act one, you take the risk, the stories are there to teach you, oh, wait, I'm supposed to encounter challenges. I'm supposed to encounter things that aren't expected. So you shift your expectations about what a story life really is. There is a wonderful, amazing children's book called What Do You Do With an Idea? I'm going to look up the author. What do you do with an idea? Let's see. It is by, because I'm going to tell you, because it's an amazing book. It is by Kobe Yamada and Mae Besom. I may be saying their names wrong. And in the beginning, I think it's Kobe says this. He says to Shay and Ever, his kids, may your lives have enough challenges to make it interesting and plenty of love to make it all worthwhile. Oh, I love that. May your life have many, something like this, have enough challenges to make it interesting and plenty of love to make it all worthwhile. See, what that did when I read that sentence, because I read these books to my kids all the time. When I read that sentence, I went, oh, yeah, the challenges are there to actually make it interesting. Like, I keep saying I want a story life, and yet I'm pretending like it's going to be pre-act one life, in that it's consistent and that it's safe and that nothing goes wrong. And it's like, wait, that's not a story. And so this, to bring it all back to the question, are you committed to getting out of act one? This is the question you need to ask yourself. Are you ready for those challenges? Are you ready? Are you committed to walking a path that has things that go wrong, that things aren't what they expect, that you experience negative, quote unquote, emotions? You experience pain, maybe, maybe not. Are you committed to that? Because if you're not, what'll happen is once you get into the story is you'll go, oh, this is no. This is not what I signed up for. Let's go back to Hobbiton. Let's go back to the Dursleys. Let's go back to act one. Okay. And that's because fundamentally, act one is grounded by fear. Fundamentally, unequivocally, act one of your lives is grounded in fear. The fear that the challenges will destroy you. The fear of, I missed the right adventure. I didn't take the right adventure. Ooh, I shouldn't have gone to follow the dwarves. I should have gone somewhere else. Right? The fear that I've done the wrong thing. You name it, whatever the fear is, the things that drive us back into act one or that keep us in act one is grounded by fear. So how do you know you're in act one? You have this general feeling that life is just going on. It's like Groundhog Day. It's like the hamster wheel. There's no quest. There's nothing. There's no purpose that you're working towards. You have this feeling that it's just going on. And that's because you're committed to playing it safe. You have an aversion to risk because you're afraid. Because you are afraid of what might lie, what dangers might lie on the other side of this adventure. You'll remember if you listen to the very first full episode of this podcast, I read or recapped the story, The Impossible Mountain by David Soman, whom I interviewed in the next episode. And the story there is exactly what we're talking about, is all the people in this village were telling the two kids that you can't leave, it's dangerous. But it was that song, it was that call to something outside of the village that prompted them to leave. Okay. Before we move on to how do you get out of Act One, the last thing I'll say is one other way that you know that you're in Act One is you just have this feeling that there's something inside of you that's not coming out. See, Gay Hendricks, he said, you know, I've traveled the world 30 times over now in all kinds of different communities. And the thing that weighs on people the most that I've seen is not being able to access their creativity. To not be able to sort of access the feeling that I can't access the music inside of you. Okay. So, and that's where we'll get to this question of how do you discover your magic abilities, your creative genius? That is the episode where we're going to talk about this thing in you that is trying to come out that needs to get unlocked. And I've said in other episodes, it's like, I describe it like there's a character in you that's trying to live out an adventure, that wants to live out an adventure. So that's how you know, some of the ways you know you are in Act One. Let's flip over to, I'm in Act One. I realize where I am. I've located my life right now. How do I get out of it? Well, first I want to stop you right there because I'm tricking you with that question a bit, because the first thing you need to do is not, how do I get out of this? How do I run away from Act One? But you need to just first have a kind of settled acceptance that that's where you are. This is where you are right now. It's okay. Maybe it makes perfect sense that you're in Act One. There could be a whole host of trauma or things you need to work through or things that are going on beneath the surface, but you won't be able to move on with the life you want until you actually can accept where you are right now, right? So what I don't want to do is to communicate that, oh shoot, like you're in Act One, this is wrong, this is not okay, run out of Act One as fast as possible, because you won't actually create the story you want that way. So the first thing to do is just to recognize where you are and to just have this settledness in yourself and say, okay, I'm in act one. Like, that's okay. It's okay that I'm in act one. Let me just kind of sit with that for a little while. Okay? So that's the first thing. Accept, sit with it, be okay with it for right now. But when you're ready to move on, when you're ready to say, okay, I've accepted this, how can I transition out of this? How can I start to create the life that I want? How can I move out of this season because I want to? Here's some ways to transition out of act one into your story. One is passively in some ways and actively. By passively, what I mean is you're not actively changing something in your life so much as you're looking at the events already happening in your life and responding to them differently. Whereas actively is you are making a choice to change something in your life, big or small. Okay. So I want to talk about the first one, passively, because I think this is actually probably the most important one, because many of us are have events in our lives that are happening all the time that are or could be inciting events. I said this in the last episode, but any event that nudges you, even slightly, out of the norm, out of your sense of control, out of your sense of safety, is or could be an inciting event if you respond to it. Like, I don't care whether it's like your partner leaving you, experiencing death or loss, or you're stuck in traffic, or you delete the presentation you were going to make at work, or they're out of something at the grocery store that you were going to make for dinner that night. Like, I don't care what it is. Every single event that is unexpected like that, or that nudges you out of your sense of safety and control, could be an inciting event. So here's what I want you to do is every single time you experience that, I want you to ask this question. What is this event inviting me to consider differently? Something like that. Something like, what is this event inviting me to reconsider or think differently about? What sense of control is this event pushing up against? Okay? Because when you do that, now you're not just yelling at life and kicking life and being like, why? Like, this is what was supposed to happen. This was not supposed to happen. Stuck in that story. It's, okay. Well, I got fired. And what is that calling me into? Like, what is this inviting me to consider? To put it really simply, it's a commitment to curiosity, to learning through curiosity. So my coach works with the Conscious Leadership Group. They're a wonderful organization of people that does a lot of executive coaching and team building and all kinds of things. And they're based, all their work is really based on the work of Katie and Gay Hendricks and others that kind of are in that kind of camp of kind of conscious living. And they talk a lot about being above or below the line. And what they mean by that is kind of their way of describing two modes of being. Being below the line, you are committed to being right, to proving that you're right, to being safe. You're in a state of fight or flight. You're in a state of reactivity. Whereas above the line, you are committed to curiosity and you are committed to learning. You are open. You are not in a state of fight or flight. You are in a state of kind of calm curiosity. Okay? Because see, when we're trying to prove that we're right, we're trying to make sure we're right, we're not learning. We're not actually committed to curiosity. We're actually being driven by fear. And ironically, we're often less right, quote unquote, in that state than when we're curious. Because when we're curious, we're actually open to thinking and seeing things differently, right? Because what happens when you are in a commitment to being, to making sure you're right and proving that you're right, and I want to say it's a little bit nuanced here, because when I say trying to be right, I don't necessarily mean like trying to be right or like being in alignment with what you think is true and good is somehow wrong. And that doesn't make any sense. I think it's more of an anxiety of, am I right? And trying to prove that to other people, right? So that's just one thing to note there. When we are there, we're not learning. So the reason I'm telling you all that is because when these events happen, whether it be getting fired, experiencing loss, or there's no more milk at the grocery store, asking yourself, what is this inviting me into? It can be very hard to do that, right? Because what can happen is if this thing that happens threatens your safety, I don't know where my next meal's coming from, or I'm in real physical danger. Yeah, that triggers some extreme fear and protectiveness, understandably so. All of these are understandable, right? Whether it's that, I don't know where my next meal is coming from, or I'm stuck in traffic. Like all of those sort of experiences to me make perfect sense why you might react in a protective kind of way. Okay. So that's what I want you to do. That's passively what's going on, is looking at the events in your life and saying, what are these calling me into? What different way of thinking or approaching my life is this event inviting me to consider? But the next one is actively, where you actively decide to take a risk. And I want to give you a few examples from me on three kind of very different levels of activeness that I did this. But first, what I want to say is, you will never make this step as long as you believe life is happening to you. See, that's another kind of above and below the line thing, is people below the line believe life is happening to them, that they are the victims of life. They are committed to what we call a victim mindset or victim consciousness. And there's a difference between victim consciousness and having been victimized, right? There are many circumstances where we have had wrong done to us and have wrong done to us. But that is different than a commitment to a victim mentality, which is, I refuse to get out of the spiral of victim. As victim becomes an identity, as we tell the same story over and over again of how we don't have control over our lives, we don't have the ability to make the choices that we need to live a good life. As long as you believe that, you will never do this thing, right? Because you are committed to a mindset that keeps you stuck there. And to be clear, this actually, your belief has absolutely nothing to do with your circumstances necessarily. Like, it is prompted by your circumstances, and things going wrong or you being wronged can very easily trigger that, but it doesn't have to, right? There are stories of people across all demographics that have experienced this and decide to respond in two different ways. One is of empowerment, that you actually believe you are the creator of your life, or a victim consciousness, which is, I don't have control of my life. You have power over me. And as soon as you do that, you're casting an enchantment on yourself that siphons your own power and gives it to somebody else. Because as long as it's your job's fault that you're miserable at your job, then you have decided that you don't have power to change it. You have actually given the magical power to change to your job instead of keeping it to make something different. So this won't happen until you are actually willing to believe that you have the power to change whatever's going on. That doesn't mean you have the power to change systems or circumstances. It means that you are in control of what you do. And I really want to lean into this magical metaphor here. Like, when I use the word of enchantment or spells or magic power, number one, like I've said in previous episodes, I think I have, I'm not talking about actual occult practices or magical rituals. I'm much more interested in the magical of the ordinary, the ways you're experiencing magic all the time. And this is actually one of them. That when somebody, and I've been here, we've all been in this place where we are under a spell of victim consciousness. It is that. Like, it is, it's literally, I almost think it's not a metaphor anymore. You are under a spell, because any suggestion that you could get out of it triggers this extreme anger or triggers this kind of desperation, because you're like, oh shit, no, like, this is who I am. Like, if you tell me that I'm the one who has the power to write my life and that I actually have the power to create my life, like, then I can't keep blaming all these people. Then I actually have to do something. Then I'm actually carrying the weight of being the creator of my life. And I don't want that. Like, I've refused that. Like, that is an enchantment. and it takes a very strong counterspell to get out of it, right? Because why else would somebody who claims to be a victim fight for it? Like, why would you fight for your own misery and your own suffering? Right? And that's what I mean. It doesn't actually make a lot of logical sense. And so that's why this metaphor of the magical power of victim consciousness, to me, explains a good part of this. Is the way I explain it is, oh yeah, there's dark magic on you. Right? There's dark magic that is keeping you stuck in this place. Because otherwise, why in the world would you not respond to this idea of, hey, you can get out of this with joy? Right? Like someone seeing truth clearly, someone being in alignment with what's true, who's saying, I'm a victim, I can't get out of this, and you said, hey, here's a way out, should go, hallelujah, oh my gosh, fantastic, yes. But they don't. When you're under that power, you fight to stay in it a lot of times. And that is the reason why I think it is kind of like an enchantment. Because that's what an enchantment is. That's how I read mythology and folklore. Is an enchantment fundamentally is someone who is disconnected from reality, who is disconnected from themselves, who is disconnected from truth. Okay? I guess what I really want to communicate here, the reason I'm telling you all this and I'm diving a little bit into this magical metaphor is I want you to understand the power that keeps you stuck in Act One. It's not just a circumstance. It's not just like a thought or an intellectual idea. It is a power. Like beliefs have power. Like they're not just ideas. There's something intangible. There's something mysterious in a belief in a certain kind of life that has a kind of magic power. And that's where the language of magic to me is the most powerful, accurate, truthful way to talk about these sorts of dynamics. It is a power that you are under when you're stuck in that place. Okay? And let me give you two examples. So one is a very large decision was after I left Netflix, I decided not to get another tech job. Okay? I decided not to get another tech job. I decided to say, hey, let me completely rethink this shit. Let me completely rethink my direction in life. Okay? That was a massive shift out of Act One, because Act One for me was the safety of the full-time tech job, right? That was Act One for me. And me saying, hey, you know what? Yeah, sure, I'll take these other jobs, but I decided not to because I made a choice to get out of Act One. See, that's an example of, yeah, I could have decided to go back to the tech job. Right? I could have decided to go back to the tech job, but I didn't. I decided to let this become an inciting event. That is to say, I chose to respond to this in a way that invited me into a story. Okay? Okay, so that's sort of level, another level, less risky. And then kind of like the least risky was, and I actually, this is my favorite example because I want this to be real and practical for you guys, that you don't have to make these big changes, these massive life changes to put this into practice, is me deciding to change the structure of a workshop that I was going to do for a couple clients. So I work at Valeer. I work at a digital agency, and I'm an experienced strategist there. And normally our workshops are very structured. Like we use, you know, digital whiteboarding tools. We have these activities, and it tends to be very structured. That's kind of maybe Act One. That's the normal way of doing things. But I knew, I was like, this isn't the way I want to do things. This isn't where my creative genius comes alive. What a part of my genius is navigating spontaneously a group conversation and being able to react to interesting ideas and go down unexpected rabbit holes and that sort of thing. So I broke out of Act One in that little moment by saying to my team, hey, I'm not going to do it this way. I know you guys normally do things this way. Not going to do it. I'm going to do it this way. I'm going to run this as just a facilitated group conversation. Okay. I'm not going to do the dog and pony show. I'm not going to get all the whiteboarding tools. I'm going to let go of needing to do all the flash to impress clients and do what I really know is my genius. Okay. That little decision was actually kind of scary, right? Because I have a very hard time actually with bucking the norm or going outside of the norm, especially in a new job where I'm like trying to feel out like, how secure is this? Like, am I good with people? You know, that's the mode I go into. And so saying, no, I'm not, like, to trust that intuitive knowing, that inner wisdom of this is like, I don't have a yes to doing the workshop in this way. I'm going to do this as a group conversation. That tiny decision was me actively getting out of an act one in my life. Okay. All right. So recap. Act one, the pre-act one is the part of your life that's going around in circles. And the story of your life hasn't started when you're doing that. You have this feeling of life's just going on. You're committed to playing it safe because you're grounded in fear. You can get out of act one passively or actively. And sometimes it's sort of a merger of both. You know, like there was a sense in which me leaving Netflix was active. I chose to and chose not to get another tech job. And it was passive. Like my manager came to me and was like, this isn't working, right? So I want to see some real change if you want this to work. Okay, so there was a synergy there, okay? So just taking a big step back, friends, what I want you to get from this episode is you do not have to just taste that little bit of adventure in the shows that you watch and in the books that you read. You can have that now. And the first step in that process is being willing, being committed to getting out of Act One, to responding to that inciting event or creating that inciting event that propels you into a story, okay? So with all that, during this next week, here's what I want you to be thinking about. Where in my life do I feel stuck? Like where in my life do I feel I'm going around in circles, okay? Here's a really challenging exercise to do that the Conscious Leadership Group does. Is they say, list three things you want to shift in your life, okay? Claim those things by starting with, I am committed to, and then list the issue. And then something else we didn't talk about, which is actually a really good exercise, is list the benefits of you staying stuck in that issue. So for me, for example, it would be like, if I rewound time, it would be, I don't like my job, it's unsatisfying. So you start with, I am committed to right now an unsatisfying job because I haven't done anything about it. And the thing I get out of that is I get safety. I don't have to take a risk. I don't have to put myself out there. I don't have to disrupt the normal beliefs I have about what life has to be. I can stay safe. So start doing that with yourself. Start playing hardball with yourself. Stop believing your own bullshit. Right? Who was it? Tori Jones. She said that in one of her albums. She's like, please help me not believe my own bullshit. Please deliver me from my own bullshit. I love that. So that's what I got for you guys. Next episode, we're going to talk about one of my favorite topics, which is this idea of discovering your real life magic abilities. Yes, it's real. Yes, it's true. Yes, it's not just a fantasy. No, it's not just fluff. It's real. Okay. So with that, I'm Jesse Livingston, and I'll see you next time.